I'm Alex Breitenbach.
I'm Sean Cabrera.
And this is the Big Red Hockey Cast, the official podcast of Cornell Big Red Hockey, produced by the Big Red Sports Network. As always, thanks for listening. And check out the Big Red Sports Network at Cornell BRSN on Instagram to never miss out on any Big Red action. Well, so as many of you faithful know, the Big Red managed to clinch the fourth seed in the ECAC playoffs. So that means that we got the week off this week. So nothing to talk about from the Cornell end. However, this past weekend was the first round of the ECAC playoffs, and it was quite an eventful one, honestly. I know I was betting on a couple matchups, but I'll just do a quick recap of how that went down. So first off, we had the number 12 seed, Yale, at the number 5, Colgate. Now, this was going to determine ultimately whether or not we were going to face Colgate. And no surprises here, because Colgate resoundingly won the series and swept Yale 2-0. However, I did ultimately bet on Yale beating them in 3 games because I wanted to see us play RPI for kicks. Their Friday night game was much better because Colgate ended up beating Yale in overtime, and then Saturday they just fell apart. So Colgate takes that series. No, not a real surprise there. Then again, we had number 11 Dartmouth at number 6 RPI, and this was actually a very interesting series because it went to 3 games. Because Dartmouth took the first game on Friday, RPI fell. RPI won on Saturday 3-2. And then RPI kind of resoundingly took it 5-3 on Sunday. So that was a very interesting series. But anyways, RPI wins the series 2-1. And then Princeton, number 10, played the number 7 Union. And as much as I was hoping that Jeremy Forget would have a better end to his senior season, he didn't. Union swept the series 2-0, with Union beating them 3-2 on Friday and 5-1 on Saturday. So not a very good showing from Princeton. Now, number 9, Brown, ended up playing number 8, St. Lawrence. And this was a very, very good series, I'll admit, because Brown did have some fight, as we saw against the Big Red. We lost to them in the regular season. However, Friday night, SLU beat Brown 4-1, and they took game 1. Brown ended up taking game 2, a very close game on Saturday, 2-1. However, the Sunday game was probably one of the best games that I have seen in terms of stats, because Brown lost that game in overtime only by a score of 4-3. It was crazy. What a heartbreaker for Brown, but St. Lawrence does take that series 2-1. Emil Zetterquist did come up big for SLU. Now, so what does this mean for the quarterfinal matchups? Well, obviously, because Colgate was able to sweep their series, it means that we will play the number 5 Colgate, and I'll let Sean get into that in a second, but let me just go through the other quarterfinal matchups real quick. We have number 6 RPI playing Harvard in Cambridge at Breitlandry Hockey Center, or as we like to call it, Lina East. And then we have number 7 Union at the number 2 Clarkson in Potsdam. And then that's Clarkson. And then number 8 St. Lawrence will face off against Yaniv Peretz, or Perret, in Hamden.
Definitely.
So that is going to be, yeah, Yaniv Perret. Okay. It's definitely Yaniv Perret. But they're all best of 3 series, so these are going to be some good matchups to see. I'm just going out on a whim here. If SLU can beat Quinnipiac, that'll be a damn miracle. I'll say that. But anyways, I'm talking out of school here. First, we got to get to our very special guest that we have in Sinbin. On this episode, we have our junior from Bainesville, Ontario. He wears the number 5. That's right. He is none other than the Sebastian Durbin, or as we like to call him, the Terminator. All right. Welcome back to the special edition of the Sin Bin here on the Big Red Hockey Cast. Today we have a very, very special guest. It's none other than number 5, Sebastian Durbin. How are you doing, Seb? Thanks for coming on the pod.
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Really excited to go here.
No, of course. And I know we were just talking off air briefly. You had said because you just came back to the rink because you're establishment night for Misha Song. What an honor.
Yeah, no, definitely a great experience to kind of cap off his hotel career.
No, that's cool. And I've actually been dying to ask this, you know, what's up with him? You know, I've wanted to have him on the pod for a while because, you know, he's one of the guys like one of the unsung heroes we don't really get to talk about that much. But, you know, how's he been doing?
You know, he's been doing really well. He still sticks around the team pretty often. And I can usually find him at Max during the day with Matt Steinberg hanging out with a few guys. But he's been doing really well.
Oh, that's great to hear. And by the way, I just tried Max for the first time last week. Great place to go. I'm definitely going there in the future. But yeah, I guess without further ado, I'll get into it. And so, you know, the Big Red got the week off because they clinched this first round bye. So I guess I have to open it up with, like, what did you do over break? What did you guys do? I know I saw a couple boys walking up Eddy Street earlier this week. Just, I don't know what they were doing, but I was headed down to go get some lunch, but I figured you guys were just chilling.
Yeah, for the most part, we ended up practicing on Friday and Saturday as well. Just a couple tough practices, get a good sweat in. But for the most part, we kind of just kept the circle a little bit tighter and hung out together, just kind of spent some extra time together, enjoy the week off. And obviously the weather was pretty nice on Sunday too. It was hard not to be outside.
Nice, nice. And did you practice today as well?
Yeah, we practiced today. Just we're going through like a normal week now, game day week. Last week was a little bit different, but it ended up being really good. Like some pretty tough practices considering we had the week off of games. So definitely some good competition going.
No. Yeah. And certainly. And I mean, I also know that I speak for all of the line of faithful when I say that we're anxiously awaiting news of Coach Schaefer and how he's doing and when he'll be back behind the bench again. And I guess with that said, you know, did he practice at all with you guys this week? How has he been?
He's been around the last couple of weeks. He hasn't touched the ice with skates, but he has been on the bench talking to the guys, and he's definitely around a bit more often, which is really nice to see. And I mean, he's just such a calming presence, I guess, in a sense, because he's been around the game for a while and he just knows when to say the right thing at the right time, I guess. It's good to have him back though.
Yeah, no. Great to have him back. And we can't wait to see him back behind the bench again. That's for sure. And I guess now that we know that the Big Red will face the Colgate Raiders this weekend, you know, like based off of the practice strategy from last week to this week, did it change at all? Or are you guys like just doing your thing?
I'd say it maybe changed a little bit, but we definitely had an idea of what we needed to improve on as a team, whether it be structure-wise, maybe a little bit of systems. So, like, primarily we're working on focusing on ourselves, like, just to fix those small issues and kind of turn it into strengths of our game. But this week we're definitely taking a little bit more of a focus towards Colgate and just getting ready for what they're going to bring.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess I'll follow that up with, you know, because we hear a lot in the, in professional hockey about, like, the importance of, like, video coaching and, like, you know, watching highlights and stuff. Do you guys do a lot of that, or is it more just kind of, like, actual on-ice stuff?
We actually do – I'd say we do a fair share of video. Like, definitely the most video I've done in my hockey career is when I came to Cornell. Oh. Coaches are really on top of it, I'd say. Like, we each have individual video sessions with the coaches every week. Like, you slot a time with them and you meet, watch your shifts. And then throughout the week, they'll throw up some video of, like, pre-scout videos of what Colgate does and their systems, just so we have a better understanding going into practice of what we're working on.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, that's certainly – I mean, that's the Schaefer strategy for you, I'll bet. And now, you've got to tell us about that goal you scored on Saturday. Hobie Baker, I was there at Princeton. How does it feel to finally get the monkey off your back, number one? And number two, I guess, what a physical game. Like, what a game, man.
Yeah, it's definitely good to get the monkey off my back. Obviously, taking the gap year and haven't scored a whole lot coming into college, kind of transitioned my game a bit more to a solid two-way guy, I guess. But definitely a little bit of relief to get that off the back. But I can't say it's not one of those things that I was looking for, but it's definitely really nice to get it. But that game in general, yeah, pretty heavy hitting game, pretty physical, and not too much give to the boards there either. So.
Yeah,
definitely. It was pretty fun to play in. Can't complain.
Oh, yeah. What a beautiful rink. I mean, I wasn't expecting. I had never been there. It was my first time. And I'm thinking, well, man, what a rink. But like quite small, but still a very, very nice atmosphere, at least for us, you know, because we packed the house. There's tons of Big Red there.
Yeah, it's almost like a lot of guys say it's almost like a home game. And I would completely agree. And I'm a huge fan. This might not be a popular, it might be unpopular, who knows, but huge fan of like the older rinks in the league, just because it brings like, it shows out the character, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's certainly like a point to be had there. And I am also a proponent of that. You know, you have Lina, you have Hobie Baker. I mean, I don't know if you could consider Harvard like very rustic. That's kind of more new age, but like that, I still like the kind of rustic barn feel of the rink.
So actually, speaking of physical games, it seems these days that defensemen come in two breeds, one being the offensively minded defenseman and the other kind being the enforcer. Now, we can definitively say without a doubt that you are one of the most physical players on the team from your distinctive style of play. We can assure that. Now, did you always want to step into that enforcer role?
This is kind of a funny story, I guess. Like growing up, I wasn't exactly a very physical player. And the majority of my coaches definitely have always told me that they always wanted more when it came to my physical play. And I think that for me, a huge thing of that was just like developing my body. I was always like a taller, skinnier, lanky guy, I guess. The last couple of years, like even the last couple of years of juniors, just throwing on a little bit of extra weight. And obviously being a little bit older in juniors, like learning to mature a little bit in hockey. I think it's really helped me step into that role. And I gotta say, I do enjoy playing like this way.
All right. So now out of curiosity, I know we gave Steinberg sort of the nickname of the Cookie Monster. How would you feel if we gave you the nickname of the Terminator, since you're just so physical in that sense?
I mean, I definitely wouldn't shut it down. That's for sure.
All right. Yeah. Well, Line of Faithful, you're hearing it here first for the first time. We have Cookie Monster and the Terminator. On
Let's
the
not
table.
Forget the chosen one. Come on.
And the chosen one. That's right. Props. And the chosen one. That is right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, furthermore, you also lead the team in penalty minutes. However, that doesn't seem to have stopped your physical style of play. Now, can we make this to mean that as an enforcer, you have to make sacrifices for the better good of the team?
I wouldn't say that particularly. I'd say there's a way that I like to play and I feel like I'm most effective for the team when I'm being physical and like laying into some guys, like hitting some guys. But I'd say that it's just the way that I have to play to kind of help the team like fit into my role. Like, obviously I don't want to give guys an easy lane to the net, or if there's a time where I have to stick up for my teammates, I will for sure. But I'd say I wouldn't change the way I play around penalty minutes, I guess, and physicality. I just kind of stick to what I know I need to do to help the team and kind of go from there.
I got you. All right. And you basically hope that – oh, go ahead, Alex.
I just wanted to butt in there. Have you heard the Line of Faithful made up a chant for you every time you're in the penalty box? It's Free Sebastian. Have you heard that before?
Yeah, I've heard it a few times, sure.
Okay.
And
okay.
I got to say, the first time I heard it, it gave me a pretty good chuckle. And now every time I hear it, I definitely enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah. It's been growing. I think it works. I think it works. No. It's always a pleasure to hear – like, you know, because we had Ian Shane on, we're like, okay, be real with us. Like, how loud are we? Can you guys hear us? He's like, oh, absolutely. I love it.
You're
like,
very
oh,
loud.
That's great. That's great. Great.
We also talked about that goal you scored on Saturday. Again, congrats on that. As a defenseman, however, do you think that on a personal level, the points at the end of the season matter?
Personally, I would say no. I wouldn't say a points describe how you play. And especially like being a defenseman of my style, I take more pride in like winning my battles and obviously like not giving up opportunities at the end of the day. Like, I think that if I come out of a game and say I'm an even player, I did my job. If I'm a plus, that's great. And as long as I'm winning my battles and just moving pucks up to the guys like Steinberg and Max, I feel like I'm doing my job. I wouldn't say points define how I play, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's certainly an amazing take nowadays, because I think people forget, you know, what the game is truly about and, you know, playing your position. Like, so many people look at like Cale Makar on the Avalanche, him just being an offensive machine, but him being a defenseman. But I think, like, you know, if you're an enforcer and you don't really care that much about scoring goals, but at the same time, you want to be there for your teammates and you want to stick up for people and be a physical presence. I think that pays dividends in the end.
Yeah, I do feel like in this day and age in particular, now that I guess one could say with advanced technology, it's become less of an eye test and more of a matter of, oh, let's look at this. Let's look at the statistics basically that are registered at the end of the day. But in reality, the eye test never fails. That's the thing. Statistics sometimes fail to tell the full story, whereas an eye test is always reliable. It's always reliable in that regard. So I do have to agree with you there. And also, let's just shift this back into your genesis. So growing up in Bainesville, Ontario, what made you want to play hockey? I mean, I'm going to assume it's probably the Canadian environment there, but just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, my dad grew up playing hockey a little bit. Not super competitive, but pretty good for the area and just kind of enjoyed doing it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think the main thing was my parents had put me in a learn to skate program. I'm not sure what age I was, but I know my parents had said every time we went, there was always hockey on before. And I was definitely like a little boy, maybe like 3 or 4 years old. And I remember asking my mom to play hockey and I kept on bugging them. And they said, okay, once we get through like the learn to skate, like the most important thing for you is to learn to skate because you don't want to go play hockey without skating. But once I got through that, they threw me in hockey and I think from there it took off. And one of the big things about Bainesville is there's a pretty nice outdoor rink where all the kids around, like you have a night off, you'd go outside and play some pond hockey on the rink and just meet up with a bunch of friends. And just the aspect of having fun with friends was just something I couldn't pass up on.
Actually, in that regard also, with, you know, being exposed to such a hockey environment, was there a professional player that also helped inspire you?
Yeah, there definitely was a professional player in like the area. There was a guy named Jesse Winchester. Mm. He actually played for the same junior team I did in Ontario. He ended up going to Colgate for 4 years, but yeah, ended up signing with the Ottawa Senators after that and had a pretty good career in the NHL. And he definitely started influencing me more around the age like 14, 15. I'd worked out at the same gym as him, had the same trainer, and just kind of see the way he like took care of himself and like just the way he held himself at the gym. Like he was always like a professional and he always cared, like he always wanted to help others. And to this day, actually, I still keep in contact with him, skate with him in the summers. And he was definitely a big influence on me.
Wow. All right. And you also mentioned Ottawa, by the way, and I guess this makes the job a little easier because we know some juniors who do happen to live nearby Ottawa. And that leads to this question. Did you ever run in with the Tupkers before your time at Cornell?
So yeah, I had played a couple of games in the CCHL against the Tupkers. It would have been their first year and my last year in the league. Mm. So we didn't see each other a ton, but definitely knew who they were. I had a really good buddy who played with them their last year of juniors before they came to school. And my brother actually played with them. The CCHL had sent a team over to Russia, kind of like a handpicked team to go over to Russia and compete in like a junior like championship tournament. And my brother had actually met them before I had met them. So,
and did he say anything in particular about them at that point, just out of curiosity?
No, he just said that they were super nice guys and fairly quiet, but they worked hard.
Hey man, I just wanted to ask because I wanted to see how much that image changed from, you know, being potential opponents to being teammates now. And also, you mentioned your brother. Was there ever any sibling rivalry involved when it came to hockey, or was there simply none of that?
No, there was definitely some sibling rivalry for sure. I'm sure if you ask my parents, they kind of wish there wasn't, I guess. But we'd always have like competitions, like just shooting outside or playing one-on-ones, or even came down to just like arguments that shouldn't happen about hockey. Like it was to the point where like it wouldn't happen all the time, but I had a lot of fun doing it. I know he had a lot of fun doing it. I think my parents were kind of the odd ones out on that part, but it was definitely fun growing up with him. My sister also played hockey as well, and she was a goalie. So when we went on the outdoor rink at home, obviously you had somebody to shoot on too, which was nice.
Oh, that's cool.
That's the best part. Man, I'll bet. Triumvirate. having siblings that do everything. You know, you have one, you have two that are the forwards, and then one that, you know, you can shoot on. I'll bet that was fun.
Exactly. Worked out perfectly.
And yeah, so I mean, regarding juniors and, you know, your time in juniors, you know, you put in some time with the Central Illinois Flying Aces. And during that time, you also played with fellow player Max Andrea. And I guess that leads me to this question. So would you say that the two of you have grown closer since you came to Cornell, or were you always close, like since your Central Illinois days?
I'd say we were always pretty close, I guess. Just like being imports and juniors, like obviously he's from Russia, but I was from Canada, so it's slightly different. But there's only so many imports you're allowed, and you instantly get a little bit of a bond with them. I'd also shared a room with Maxie on the road a couple times. And obviously, like the Cornell connection, he wasn't committed to Cornell at first. And once like Flanagan and Schaefer and Sire had started talking to him, we definitely grew a little bit closer, just like bonding over Cornell and stuff like that. But I guess it's been five years now that I've known Maxie. And we've definitely grown closer for sure.
And so wait. So Max was actually like younger than you when you were playing with Central Illinois, or no?
No, we're this, like, he's the same age as I am. Actually, he's just one grade ahead of me, but okay. He just hadn't been committed to Cornell yet.
Okay. Well, was when he committed to Cornell, was he a deciding factor at all for you, or like what made you want to come to Cornell?
So I actually had committed to Cornell before I went to Central Illinois. The huge, I guess, like, this is like the whole question, like why I came to Cornell, but the huge thing for me, like I talked to a lot of guys, and the huge thing for me is the people. Like the coaches are like super down to earth. They're super caring. And it wasn't all about hockey. Like they always checked in to see how you're doing, like throughout the week. They always asked about your family. And it was just like the ability to have like normal conversations with the coaches, because obviously like they're like hockey alone, they're great coaches. Like you can't ask for any better. But then when you add in like the whole other side about how like they're asking how you're doing every week, like they're checking in consistently. And it just adds on to everything. Like you come to visit the school, everybody here, like the culture, it's like everybody's talking to you, like they're friendly. It's almost like you fit in right away.
Yeah. No, I'll bet everybody always has some sort of very touching tribute there. And that really is a testament to how unbelievable the hockey culture is here at Cornell, and just the depth of the program. It's absolutely unbelievable to see. And I mean, I guess reflecting on your juniors as a whole, because you, like, you know, your junior career wasn't just the USHL and in with the Central Illinois Flying Aces, but like, what was your favorite part about being in junior hockey and getting that experience? Because I feel like everybody to a certain extent goes through junior hockey. But they all have very, very unique experiences. So what was your favorite part as a whole? Like, you know, it doesn't have to be with Central Illinois. It could be like just about junior hockey.
I mean, generalizing it would be coming to the rink for sure. Like over my 4.5 years of playing junior hockey, like you played with some amazing guys and you just love coming to the locker room and hanging out with everybody. Didn't really like, obviously it mattered how the season was going and things like that, but each day, like knowing that you're going to go to the rink, you're going to be with the guys, you're just going to have fun, and you're going through the same thing as these people are. Like it's just something special about going to the rink and hanging out with the guys in the locker room.
Yeah, the camaraderie for sure, I'll bet. And I mean, I guess on that, you know, do you still keep in touch with many of your former teammates? I mean, you know, we all saw that kind of bro hug you gave Mitchell Gibson, Gibby Smalls after the Harvard game. So, you know, it's always good to play against them, I'll bet.
I still keep in touch with a lot of guys I play with, and definitely wasn't too happy with Gibby after that game with his celly. I let him know on the handshake line that wasn't too happy with that celly at his student session. But obviously, like, there's been some guys that I spent a lot of time with at other schools. Like, for example, like Zach Metza was one of them as well.
Oh, no way.
We had played together in Central Illinois. And then even like just guys that I played hockey with in Cornwall, a lot of them were from the similar area to me. Like we grew up playing hockey together, like kind of rose to the ranks together. And they're my best friends to this day. I like hang out with them throughout the summers, and just I keep in contact with them all the time.
Yeah. Well, I can say regarding Gibby Selle, I mean, I don't think anybody in the student section was very happy about that. Although I'll be honest, I was yeah. laughing hysterically because I've never seen that before in my life. That was the only time I think the Lion of Faith will ever got their medicine handed to them. But like, you know, that was brutal. But no, certainly
love a goalie with a little personality.
I know exactly. And I guess I'll follow that up with, you know, when you came to Cornell and reflecting on your 3 years here, and we ask everybody this question in a different way, but who was your mentor figure that you like regard the highest throughout your time at Cornell?
This is a tough question because like there's definitely a handful of guys, which I feel like that's the case with many guys in our locker room. But I'd say the main few, Tristan Mullen was a huge influence on me, actually. He was my mentor through the summer, like chosen because I went into agricultural science to start. And he just made the whole process of enrolling in my first like semester of school. He made my schedule, kind of treated me like, I don't know, like a little baby a little bit, I guess, kind of like babied me throughout the process, and answered all the questions I had. And definitely watching him, like, he's a professional in the locker room, professional off ice, like just a great guy all around. But another one would be Yanni Caldas. So Yanni's from Montreal, and Montreal is probably about an hour for me. But obviously he definitely took the reins when it came to teaching systems and just chatting in the locker room. I had like the honor of sitting next to him in the locker room my freshman year, him and Alex Green actually. And just great guys to talk to and kind of pick their mind a little bit. So I'd say Tristan Mullen and Yanni Caldas were my main two mentors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, regarding Tristan Mullen, I've heard from a lot of people that since he was like one of the oldest people on the team when he graduated, like he was like the father figure in quotes, like for the team. Is that sort of what I'm getting at here?
I guess you could say that, but I'd say there's a few more guys who definitely had a fatherly figure, like, versus his personality for sure. But he definitely took care of us for sure.
I bet. We miss Molly dearly.
So do we.
Now, your aforementioned professional player hero played at our least favorite toothpaste university, Colgate. Now that we know the Big Red will be facing the Toothpasters, as I think now we'll dub them this weekend, this series is sure to be a solid one, a good one, and perhaps even a tight one. Well, at least we'll bet. So how are you personally feeling heading into this weekend?
Honestly, I'm very excited. Obviously, the season series with them didn't go the way we wanted to. But you can definitely tell just by the way guys are practicing this week and battling last week. Definitely got something to prove, I'd say. Like, there's nothing better than coming back and getting a little bit of revenge, I guess you could call it, or just kind of wanting to prove yourself. And I think like we have a perfect opportunity this weekend to come back and kind of show them like what Cornell hockey actually is. And yeah. I know a lot of guys have a chip on their shoulder and they're pretty excited to get going here this weekend.
Kind of like that vengeful feel that you just mentioned, and the regular season series against Colgate, I mean, for sure it was chippy and physical, and I'm sure that's a match atmosphere where you'd thrive for sure. So do you personally, by the way, have any scores that you would like to settle in this upcoming series?
I personally don't have any scores by any means to settle. I think okay. It's just like, obviously I want to prove myself and I want to give my team the best chance to win. But I think going into the game, I can't be focused on trying to settle any scores. Maybe it's more just going into the game and treating every player the same, just being tough on them and kind of giving them zero to little space on the ice.
I got you. All right. Sounds like a good plan. I mean, we're just curious if, you know, Mr. Durbin has any targets on the ice for that, for those, hopefully two nights. If it requires three, so be it. It'll still go our way for sure. And of course, with that, we do have to thank you so much for joining us on the Sin Bin, but you listeners already know what's up next. It is the Slapshot round right after this. All right, welcome to the Slapshot round, where we ask hard-hitting, fun questions and have you answer them as quick as you can. So per tradition, we always got to ask the first one. Are you good to go, Seb?
Good to go.
All right. I like this. Who do you think is most likely to win the Stanley Cup?
This is a toss-up, but I'm going to have to go with Colorado, I think. Colorado, just gonna have a good, okay. Yeah, it's a toss-up, but I'm going to go with Colorado. I think they got a good mix of some pretty skilled guys and some guys who are pretty gritty, and obviously they're pretty deep four lines, so it's hard to beat.
I'll do you one better. Colorado over who?
Yikes, this is tough. Definitely not gonna throw the Leafs in there, that's for sure. But
oh, sorry, Mike.
No, I'd like to see I'd like to see Boston in the finals, maybe.
Oh yeah, Boston. Really? Yeah.
Okay. It's
been kind of overdue, I suppose.
All right, interesting. Now moving on from that, as a Canadian, what Canadian stereotypes or stereotype, maybe it's a singular one, irks you the most?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, there definitely isn't one that irks me the most, but it's a lot of people at the school ask us to say out or like about, like just kind of like, they just kind of want to see the way that we speak. And I think that might be the most annoying one, that like, once they find out you're from Canada, they try to get you to say certain words to maybe pull something out of you.
I got you. Okay.
I mean, that's really fair. I mean, although honestly, like my bet for who's got like the most like what Americans would think as stereotypically a Canadian accent would not actually be anybody that's actually from Canada on the team. It would be Cody Haskin.
Okay, that's fair. I could kind of see that.
Well, because he's from Fargo, North Dakota, and like that's like really, really north Midwest, and like that's, they have such a unique accent there, which I think, you know, it's kind of similar to like Manitoba, I would think. I don't know, it's just my take on Cody. We love you.
So I guess as a continuation of your Canadian background, last month, I think it's actually exactly a month from now, I believe, we interviewed Coach Doug Dara, class of 91, captain of the Big Red hockey team at the time. He is from Arnprior, which is not too far from Bainesville, if I remember correctly. And, well, we have to ask, have you ever been to the chip stand there?
To the chip stand in Arnprior?
Yeah.
I have not, actually.
Okay. I mean, our producer probably knows more about the chip stand there. I'm just assuming because he's also from Ontario. And I mean, we have heard it is legendary. So again, we just have to ask.
That's fair. No, it's about like an hour and a half from my house, maybe. So it's a little far.
I got you. And again, this is coming from a person who's never been to Canada, at least not yet. I would love to go to Canada. Just, I don't have the time, man. School's been oof, especially this week.
I'd agree with that one.
Yeah, totally fair. Understandable.
No, actually, now that I think about it, is there something similar in Bainesville? Any notable things people should know about in the town?
Not a super big town, I guess. If you're talking about the actual town of Bainesville, there's no stoplight, I guess. There's a train shack, convenience store. And then obviously the outdoor rink's probably the biggest part of like the community. But we're like not too far away from like Cornwall, Ontario, which is like a smaller city, you would call it, probably about 30, 35 minutes away. And then obviously Montreal and Ottawa are pretty close as well.
And now you mentioned Montreal. How far is actually Bainesville from Quebec, or Quebec, as some people say?
2 minutes, maybe.
Well, okay. So yeah. Now that leads me to a curious question. How is your French, actually?
It is not great. I'm going to be completely honest. It's definitely gotten a lot worse over the years, too, since I haven't used it since high school.
I got you. Hey, I mean, it happens. I was just curious, man.
Well, I'll actually do you one better. Out of your time at the Big Red, who was the one guy on the Cornell Big Red who could speak the best French, in your opinion? Did you guys have... Because Caldas was from Quebec, so like,
yeah, there's only two guys I can throw in this mix, and it'd be Brendan Locker, Yanni Caldas. I mean, they could have a pretty fluent conversation back and forth, so I don't know if I can choose one.
Ah, okay. Man, Locke, I wouldn't have expected that.
I was not putting Locke my money on him.
He can speak very, he's pretty fluent. Pretty sure it was his first language as well. So.
Oh, man. Oh, that's actually pretty cool. Man, he didn't tell us this. It's crazy.
Yeah. I know who to practice with now.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. But if the Big Red were to come out onto the ice with a licensed song, what would it be? Like, you know, the number one hype song that you'd love to hear, like barring copyright infringement or what have you, like what would be your song that the Big Red would come out to that's not Give My Regards to Davey?
See, you're not asking a great guy when it comes to knowing the names of songs. I'm definitely not one of the top music guys in the room, but I definitely couldn't put a name to a song right now that I think would work. There's just a few, like there's too many going through my head right now. I think the guy you'd want to ask this would be either Jack Malone, maybe Liam Motley, or I even throw Nate McDonald in the mix.
Interesting. Yeah, Nate and Motley are certainly renowned for their music taste. We'll say that. I mean, I'll do you one better. What's your favorite chant from the Line of Faithful then?
I'm a big third period chant when we come on the ice. Yep. And they got that going. I know there's been freshman year, I remember I could catch myself singing along to it a little bit or looking around, seeing some guys going, but definitely a huge fan of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Gives you chills. I've heard from some people.
Or even just the basic yelling red through the national anthem. That's definitely one that sends chills down a lot of people's backs as well.
Yeah. And I guess I'll follow it up with, you know, why did you choose number five? Why five?
So I had played with number five in Cornwall and I'd just always been a fan of it, but I guess it might go back to a little bit to my younger days. I guess I used to watch Nick Lidstrom play and was always a fan of how he played. Just never really made a mistake. Always simple and just a professional, just a fun to watch, really fun to watch.
So is Nick Lidstrom your like celebrity idol in terms of hockey?
That's a tough one because there is a lot of guys that sit, like I do follow, but I'd say he's up there for sure.
Yeah.
I was always an Ottawa fan growing up, so obviously when the Carlson era came in, I was a huge fan of Carlson for a while, but also Shea Weber was one I liked to watch a lot.
Oh yeah, Shea Weber, of course.
Now, Seb, if you weren't doing Big Red hockey, what sport would you most likely pursue?
That's a great question. My skill set would definitely not allow me to pursue golf.
Okay.
That's very fair to say, but I wouldn't mind playing some baseball, I think, or lacrosse.
Yeah.
Interesting. Like those two would be, I love playing lacrosse. Like it's pretty fun, but I'd say baseball. I just think the whole idea of baseball is pretty cool.
Yeah. Did you play lacrosse growing up?
Like, I played a little bit when I was younger, like a couple years of box when I was younger. And then when we were in high school, I played field lacrosse for my senior year, just because we can play for the hockey team. But definitely the stick skills are not there, but definitely tried to bring a little bit of aggression.
Yeah, I'd actually been meaning to ask about that because In the United States, I feel like there's such a like following attached to lacrosse, but like, I'm not sure if it's the same in Canada. Like, is lacrosse popular in Canada?
I'd say lacrosse is pretty popular. Yeah. A lot of my friends grew up during the summers playing box lacrosse. So it'd kind of be like a split between you play hockey during the winter and then either you continue playing hockey during the summer, you play box or maybe a little bit of soccer, but I'd say lacrosse is pretty big.
Oh, okay. I mean, our producer's just telling us that lacrosse is the national sport of Canada or something like that. I did not know that. As an American, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, again, two Americans, what can you do, man? It's not like we're doing any better for the stereotype, not knowing much about the other countries yet. It happens. Actually, now I think about it, since you mentioned baseball, lacrosse, I'm surprised wrestling wasn't on your mind at that point. I mean, given your physical nature.
No, I think I'm too long of a body and I don't have a low enough center of gravity, I think. Just don't really think it would suit me too well.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably face off someone against in your weight class, right?
Maybe if I had some training and some skill in it for sure, but definitely not without any type of lessons.
Yeah. Well, I can. Well, I'll do you one better there. Who, like, on the team right now, do you think could possibly, if they were, you know, either in a fight in the NHL or they did boxing for real, who do you think could, like, hold their own the most, like, as a boxer in that regard?
If we're talking boxing or, like, fighting, like in hockey, I'd say Travis Mitchell could hold his own pretty well.
Okay.
If we went the we went with the wrestling route, I'd have to go with O'Leary because he wrestled in high school and I've seen him wrestle a few of the guys and he knows what he's doing.
Oh, geez. Okay. And you mentioned golf. I feel like golf is stereotypically, like, goes hand in hand with hockey as, like, you know, just the sport people do just to shoot the ball in the spring. And so you had mentioned that you're not the golf guy, but, like, who on the team you think has the, or it could be either them self-proclaiming or, you know, objectively speaking, who is the best golfer on the team?
See, I haven't golfed with very much. Like, I've only golfed maybe once with guys at school here. I've only golfed a handful of times in my life because I'm not great at it, but I'm definitely trying to pick it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But just from the chatter around, I hear Berard's pretty good. Malone's pretty good. I kind of more hear the talk in my house a little bit from when it comes to golfing, just because it doesn't travel too far.
Well, that's fair.
But I'd say those two are up there. Zach Bramwell plays a decent amount, so I'd say he's pretty good. But I honestly couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, because we'd ask Locke this question, do you have any other wacky skills? Like, just some random life hack or skills that you, like, are really good at besides hockey? Because I know Locke had said, of all things, he was amazing at darts.
Yeah, no, I can't really think of one that comes to mind, to be honest, which probably not a great answer, but I can't really pinpoint anything at the moment.
No.
Definitely not as good at darts as Locker is, though.
Yeah.
Isn't that good?
I think I've only seen him throw a few darts, but I'm pretty sure they're pretty good shots.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man, because I still have yet to technically challenge him. There's a couple things on the bucket list, and I remember in the beginning – of this series or franchise, however you want to label this podcast series. How about that?
Yeah.
I did give him a light-handed challenge at darts. I mean, I'm decent. I'm not the best. I'm decent, not bad. But I mean, it's also been a while since I've practiced. So we'll see about that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Also, you said,
get that going.
You said Berard, apparently maybe one of the best golfers on the team. And I guess this plays hand in hand because I believe both Ian Shane and Nate McDonald said that he had one of the hardest shots to actually stop because he's a sniper, basically. So for you, who would win the hardest shot competition?
On the team?
Yeah.
If we want to block a shot in practice, names that come to mind, Berard and Lagerstrom are two that I preferably wouldn't want to get hit in a bad spot with.
Fair enough.
Those would be the two that I would say. Berard's just got, like, a really unique release and just zips the puck. And Lagerstrom, just there's always a good weight behind that shot.
I got you.
Yeah. I'll flip that on its head, though. Who on the team has no fear at all? Like, will step in front of any shot, doesn't matter who's taking it. Like, will take it to the face if he has to block the shot. Like, who's that guy?
I got to give that to Pete Muzyka. He just he's always happy. Like, he's always flying around, yelling on the ice. And, I mean, he loves it. I would have to give that one to Pete. I think he'd be pretty fearless when it came to blocking a shot.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah.
Takes a brave soul to do that. I mean, I just have to say it, man. As a guy who can't actually play it as well as you guys for obvious reasons, I have to admit the bravery there. And also with that, I kind of want to retract to your Canadian background again. And this is sort of a semi-running gag we ask, but is there a particular food that you miss from Canada or that us Americans should try?
Particular food?
Like desserts, sweets, you name it. We've heard beaver tails before.
Beaver tails are, I am a huge fan of beaver tails. The last time I had one of those was actually in Ottawa when I met up with Nate, the Tupkers, and Joe Leahy during COVID after a skate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have Nanaimo bars?
What's it called?
I believe it's Nanaimo. Maybe I'm wrong, but those are pretty good. It's just like a dessert bar kind of, but I'd say, if I'm going to go stereotypical, poutine, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
Pretty good as well, but I don't have anything particular. I'd say I eat pretty common foods, I guess.
Yeah.
I got you.
I know Benny Sire, this was going on for 30, 45 minutes about Canadian food. It was one of the funniest discussions we've ever had.
Yeah, no, he definitely gets his opinion out there for sure. And definitely he does it well.
Yeah.
Can't complain. I know he's a big fan of, I guess all the guys are ketchup, I guess. I know he calls it, what's he call it? The Canadian gravy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He calls it Canadian gravy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, ketchup definitely gets used quite a bit.
Are you into that yourself? Like you put it on everything, mac and cheese, eggs?
I would put it on mac and cheese. I'd put it on eggs, breakfast potatoes, yeah, but nothing too crazy, maybe. Maybe a breakfast sausage, depending on the taste.
What's too crazy then? Like, I'm assuming you don't put it on. I mean, I don't know what's crazy. I'm going to guess like spaghetti. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't do that. That's for sure. I don't know too many people who've done that, but I have seen it once or twice. And I thought it was a little weird.
Yeah.
There is a fine line.
Well, no.
I'd agree.
Now, here's something. Why, what made you want to join the Fishbowl gang initially? Because, you had initially adopted the Fishbowl, and we've seen people come in, people drop out of it, but what makes the Fishbowl superior?
I'm a huge fan of the Fishbowl still, to be honest, but I'd say it's just it's very similar to wearing a visor in juniors. You don't really have anything in your face. It's kind of like an easy transition. The reason I switched was last year during COVID, we had to wear masks skating. And the Fishbowl already fogs up a decent amount when you're skating around without a mask. So having a mask on was virtually impossible for myself anyways to kind of keep it defogged and clear to see through. And then just haven't really transitioned back, I guess.
Well, I was going to ask that. How often does it fog up in game? Because I'd imagine that's pretty annoying. You go and you because, full disclosure, I never joined the Fishbowl gang in high school. My years I played varsity hockey, I was not one of them because it wouldn't stop fogging up. But, I'll bet that's annoying.
Yeah, during games, it's not too bad. It definitely clears up. If it fogs up a little bit on the bench, once you start skating, you're good to go. And usually, during games, it's definitely better than practice because you do have the towel to wipe it off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. And then – I guess on that topic, I also wanted to ask, because I've never actually been able to ask this before, but who, if you had to time it, if you had a watch or a timer, who on the team would get dressed the fastest? Bar none, could just throw everything on and be ready to go the fastest.
See, that would be two names that come to mind. There's a couple of guys who like to start their warm up a little bit later. And I'd definitely throw Hank Kemp in the mix because he always seems to be coming into the room a little bit later than most guys. And I always look over, he's dressed pretty quickly. Or I've seen Steiny get dressed pretty fast a few times, actually. Once again, getting a little bit of a longer warm-up in if he needs it. And then gets dressed pretty fast. So I'd put those two, to be honest.
By the way, we talked, just to retract a little bit, rewind our memories perhaps to this earlier part of the episode. We talked about the accumulated penalty minutes earlier. Yeah, you also talked about being able to hear the Free Sebastian chants, which never get old, apparently. And I have to agree with that, man. It's always lighthearted. It's always kind of funny. So does it ever get lonely in the sin bin, Mr. Durbin?
Not usually. I try not to think about it too much. Honestly, if I'm in the box and I didn't bring anybody with me, I'm more concerned about watching the guys kill it off and just kind of, I know they don't really hear me cheering them on, but I'm just kind of always talking to myself, just hoping that they kill it off and be good to go after that. But I wouldn't say it gets lonely. Try not to think about that too much.
Not fair. I mean, again, how lonely can you get when you hear Free Sebastian just right outside?
Yeah. Yeah. Even we tried to do it at Hobie Baker too, although I don't know if you could hear that from there. It's because the majority of the people around us were pretty old. They weren't the new like hip people. So we tried to get everybody in on this as much as we could, but like, no, it's great.
Also, we found out recently about, well, we found out about Kyle Betts' middle name. Out of curiosity, does he ever go by his middle name Cougar or Cougs?
He does not. He does have like, we do know like Kyle C. Betts, but he either goes by Betsy or mostly just Betsy, to be honest. Okay. But I've never heard that actually. Maybe I might have to slip that in once or twice, see how he reacts.
Oh dear.
Maybe. I mean, hopefully he takes it lightheartedly. I mean, it's just a nickname, you know?
Yeah. That's fair. And I mean, well, also I'd heard that, and you know, I don't want to draw too much attention to Shaner, our boy Tallarico, but does he strap the pads on for practice?
Oh yeah. Last year during COVID, we were definitely looking for a goalie because some days, McGrath had some classes and Glad had classes. So it always just be Nate on the ice for a few days a week. And Shaner would strap on the pads and we'd play some 3-on-3 hockey with him, or he'd go in net for the drill. And I got to say, he did a really good job.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And I guess to follow that up, you know, if it was ever an emergency situation where you didn't have Gordy, you didn't have Shane, you didn't have Nate, who are you picking to be your e-bug?
I heard that Betsy's a pretty good goalie. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, he had self-proclaimed that when he was on the podcast earlier. He's like, yeah, I'd go myself.
You see, I hadn't heard it from him, so that's reassuring that he has confidence in himself for sure. But if you guys had definitely brought it up, I think it might have been Nate who said he was a pretty good goalie.
Yeah, Nate as well. He had said he was raving about it. He's like, oh yeah, without a doubt, I think he could stop quite a few of them before he lets one in.
And 10 shots. Against Betts, how many would you think would go in just on average, or if we were shooting on him, let's say?
That's a great question. I've never seen Betts technically in nets. I know he's a very athletic guy. If I were shooting on him, I'd have to go with full confidence in myself and maybe give myself like 8 or 9 out of 10, depending on where the shots are from.
At least you still give him the 1 or 2 saves.
Okay. I'm just gonna be confident in myself. but honestly, I have no clue. I think he'd do a really good job, though. Pretty athletic guy.
Yeah, I think he could shut out Yale. I'd give him that confidence. I think he could shut out Yale. Just gonna be honest. Yeah, no, that's definitely.
That still got me a little bit giggling there. But I kind of also want to make a callback to a past episode, because this past weekend, I finally got to watch Interstellar, as I promised to Nate McDonald. And with that, do you have a favorite film?
Not in particular. I am a big movie guy, to be honest. Like, it'd be fair to say that if you walked in my room on the odd night, I'd have Netflix on in the background, just maybe doing some homework or watching a movie with a few guys. But I can't say I have one movie in particular that if I had to watch over and over again that I could, but I'm a huge fan of sports movies, to be honest. Like, I just find something about like kind of watching a couple, like whether it be like basketball or football or something, like just kind of like getting into it almost, like I don't know, kind of wanted to play.
Yeah, you ever watched The Waterboy, Adam Sandler?
Yep, I have watched that. It's a great movie.
It's a great one. No, but well, I guess I'll follow that up. What's the most overrated film of all time, in your opinion? Like, just
can't answer this one. That's not going to be good. I don't know what would be considered overrated. I know some people tell me that Step Brothers is overrated, but I'm a huge fan of that movie. But I can't pinpoint one.
Yeah, somebody said that on the podcast. They said Step Brothers, and I was like, what? No, what? Oh, no, you know, just trying to
like, I wouldn't put it,
personal biases aside, you know. But like,
yeah, I wouldn't put it as one of my favorite movies of all time, but I definitely wouldn't say it's overrated, I guess.
All right. That's fair. Oh, Bella, you said sports movies. And I mean, I think the latest sports movie to come out, I think was like American Underdog, the Kurt Warner story, if I remember correctly. Did you get to watch that one?
I haven't, but I might have to add it to the list.
Hey, I mean, I guess I'm glad I helped out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just adding to my distractions from school.
Well, and I wanted to ask about that. You had just slipped this in there, but you had said you watch Netflix in the background while you're doing your homework.
Yeah, it's not, I wouldn't say it's every time, but if I'm doing like some readings for class, or if I'm kind of just going over stuff that I learned in class, like just kind of a refresher, I definitely would have it on the background. Just kind of just if I want to take a break, I'll maybe watch an episode of whatever I'm watching currently, and then go back to studying. Kind of like, I kind of help, like it split things up a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. I also wanted to ask, since you're in Cal's, like what is your major? I know like a lot of people say like, oh, I'm pre-med, or oh no, I'm actually doing food science or something. What's your major?
So I actually transferred out of Cal's. My sophomore spring, I had transferred out of Cal's, but while I was in Cal's, I was doing agricultural science. So that was like, I guess the whole major is based around like plant science. Just kind of like a lot of it was plant science, some bio, some sustainability stuff. But I ended up transferring into the hotel school actually my sophomore spring. Just kind of, I was enjoying like the business side of things. I had taken a few business classes and was looking to do a business minor. And nice. Then my roommates freshman year were Ben Berard and Matt Steinberg, and they were both in hotel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd kind of learned a little bit more about the program and just kind of see some of the stuff that they were doing like for work and class, and really thought that was something that I could apply myself in.
Yeah. Seems kind of like Betts is the odd man out because he's got the ECE and the electrical engineering. And the...
Yeah. He, Michael Suda is the only other engineer in the team right now. So
wow,
definitely a very tough major to handle with hockey. And I got to say, Betsy does a really good job with it. You wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's because we'd asked him, we're like, well, do you do your homework on the bus? And like, when you do your homework on the bus, are people making fun of you? He's like, oh, absolutely. He's like, yeah. He's like, I've had to on the road just been doing his homework. That's crazy.
Honestly, a lot of guys this year have been doing homework on the bus, and I mean, I don't mind doing it. Kind of like 4 or 5 hours that you can kind of listen to the movie that gets played on the bus and do some homework, and you have a few guys in your class probably that can help you out. So. Definitely a pretty good time to do it.
Well, and I'd actually wanted to ask this because I noticed right after the game at Princeton, you guys left almost immediately. Like you guys did not stick around for much longer, but like, have you guys ever gotten the chance at an away game to just kind of experience the college town or like go chill somewhere? I know in Arizona, you guys went and played some golf, or at least the guys who were the golfers did.
Yeah. So usually when we play in conference games, we don't stay overnight on the Saturday night. Like usually we'll travel to the next place. Or if it's a Saturday night game, we'll come back to Ithaca and get in a little later. But trips like Arizona or like North Dakota or even like Vegas last year, pretty cool trips because Arizona, we're there for a few days before the game, kind of got to check out the campus and walk around a little bit during the day. And obviously we all got to go golfing, which was pretty cool. And then North Dakota, I gotta be honest, we didn't do a whole lot. It was a little too cold to step outside. The farthest the guys went were to the gas station to grab some snacks and back to the hotel, and that was like a 5-minute walk, but it was definitely long enough in the cold.
Also, you said that you like to put Netflix in the background. I think that's kind of relatable. Do you have a favorite Netflix show for that matter?
So Canadian Netflix and American Netflix have different shows on it. But Netflix has been taking down some shows, but I'd say some of my favorite shows, Friends has to be probably one of the top ones for sure. I'm a big fan of Trailer Park Boys, and so are a few guys on the team.
I haven't gotten to watch that one yet.
Pretty mind-numbing, but just kind of easy to have on the background. Suits was a big one for me when I was in juniors in Ontario. But I'd have to say Friends is probably my top, where even How I Met Your Mother is pretty good.
So with that being said, I guess how about we enhance our inner BuzzFeed and ask you, which Friends character are you?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd like to think I'm kind of a mix of the three guys, I guess.
Fair. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if I can I can't put myself as one, I don't think. Like, I like to consider myself, like, I take a lot of shots when it comes to jokes, and I know I'm not a lot of them hit. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'd like to think I'm kind of funny, so I'd throw a little bit of Chandler in there. Oh, but, yeah, okay. I don't know. That's a tough one.
All right. I mean, fair enough. And apparently, I believe Matthew Perry himself is Canadian. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
You could be right. I'm not too sure, to be honest.
Now I'm gonna have to check, because I think that's scratching my brain a bit. I do believe he's Canadian.
He's Canadian American. He is Canadian. Okay.
He's Canadian American because he was born here. Okay. But I think he lived over there.
Well, I mean, because I'd also wanted to ask this regarding bus trips. Like, you know, is there enough space in the bus where you each get your own seat, or do you guys have to sit next to somebody? And I guess, like, if you were going to sit next to somebody, who would you least want to sit with?
Okay, this is an interesting question, actually. But for in-conference games, like, when school's going on, we can only travel with, I believe it's 23 guys. So there are a few guys, like, I think all the freshmen end up doubling up. But after that, from like sophomores to, or I guess juniors to seniors, we all get our own seat. But if we're basing it off of comfort, the last guy I'd want to sit next to is B Tubbs, because he would take up majority of the two seats, even if he has a big body next to him. But I'm not a very talkative guy on the bus. So I kind of like to listen to the music, and obviously I'll get my touches in here or there if I see the right time. But Jack O'Leary would be a great guy to sit next to, I think.
Yeah.
Every time I look over, he's either got his headphones on or he's sleeping. So if I wanted to have a conversation, I could pull his headphones off and he'd talk. But if he was sleeping, I'd just be able to hang out and kind of do my thing, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's also small too, relatively speaking.
I wasn't going to bring that one up, but yeah.
Oh, God. Jack, I'm sorry. No. But yeah, I'll bet that seems pretty cool. But wait, so that answers, because you had mentioned, you said you're only allowed to bring 23 guys.
Maybe it's 25. I don't know the actual number. Well, I don't know the actual number, but
okay. Is that the reason that Gordy wasn't with you guys this weekend?
Oh yeah, so we're only allowed to travel with, I don't know what the exact number is, but we're only allowed to travel with so many. And sometimes we'll bring three goalies, or sometimes we'll bring an extra player, just depending on the situation, I guess. Not really sure how it gets decided, but usually they'll work their way around it.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that confused the hell out of me, because when Princeton came to Lina, they had three goalies, but two of them were sitting outside the rink. Like, they weren't even on the bench. And I was like, wait, well, like, they're allowed to bring three goalies, but we didn't even bring Gordy to Hobie Baker. It's just like,
it's just all about the travel size roster.
Gotcha. Now, obviously, not only do you play for the Big Red side, but you're also part of Cornell University as a student. We've already been talking about this more or less. Has there been a course so far where you were like, man, this is near impossible?
Near impossible. There was a bio class my freshman year that I didn't last too long in, to be completely honest. It was my first semester in school, and I hadn't been in school for a while, I guess. So you could say my study habits were a little bit off, but there's definitely a bio class freshman year that I ended up dropping maybe a month in, maybe before the ad drop deadline ended, just to kind of reacclimate myself to school, I guess. Kind of needed it to just figure out some study habits and kind of figure out how I'm going to do the school, but I'd say that would be the hardest class. And maybe in hindsight, it actually wasn't the hardest class, but just the situation I was in.
Was it Bio 1350 by any chance, or 1440?
Not entirely sure of the course code either, to be honest, but I think it was an intro bio. I don't even know if it was that hard.
No, that's all right. The intro bio classes, let me tell you, have been taken several. Well, not, I guess I could say several. Haven't taken several of them. They're not the prettiest. I could totally agree with that. I mean, personally, microeconomics was killer to me. I don't know why,
Don't even talk to me about econ. I don't want to do that stuff. I have a pre on Thursday. I don't even want to think about it. But like, yeah, that no, that's my that, that's my class that I want to drop, but it's required, so I have to take it. But yeah.
Well, I guess now the listeners can hear the student struggle.
Yes, exactly.
You know, behind every happy voice, there's always a student struggle with classes. Don't quote that on me, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I was going to ask that, like, you know, you have a lot of games. So, like, how do you most effectively manage your work over, like, a long, like, because there are multiple weekends where you guys are just traveling the entire time. So, like, what do you guys do?
To be fair, school usually goes away on Thursday nights, I guess. Like, I won't generally touch school on Fridays or Saturday, and none of the other guys will either, I guess. So a lot of it comes down to just finding time throughout the day, during the week, like Monday to Thursday. I'm lucky enough that I set up my schedule where I have a couple hours before practices Monday and Wednesdays where I can hunker down and get a little bit of work done. But Sundays are also pretty big grind days, I'd say.
Yeah, that's fair to assume. And also, I mean, I suppose this is the last question, unfortunately, given our time. It's the last question, the ultimate question. Some say the hardest question. But do you have any shout-outs, any thank yous, any comments you would like to add about the Cornell Big Red hockey experience thus far?
About the hockey experience, I definitely got to thank like the coaches, my teammates, and the line of faithful for making like the 2 years of hockey that I've played here have just been phenomenal, and the funnest I've had playing hockey, and definitely getting the most memories from them. Obviously wouldn't be Cornell hockey without the line of faithful either. Funnest rink to play in college hockey by far. And obviously I got to thank my parents and everybody who helped me growing up. Without them, definitely would not be in a situation like this, and definitely consider myself really lucky to be here.
That's very touching, man. That's honestly like one of the most touching we've had. Because we usually ask them like, oh, I don't know where to start. That was very, very eloquent, dude.
Appreciate it.
Oh, of course. And so thank you so, so much, Seb, for joining us today. It's been an honor, and you know, we wish you all the best of luck this weekend in the quarterfinals, and we will all be there Friday night. We can't wait, and hopefully we'll get that dub, man. Can't wait for it.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me, guys. Had a great time.
Of course.
Well, to quote my Connecticut partner, always good to hear from Sebastian Durbin. How did that one sound, Alex?
Sounded amazing. So I like it.
Thank you. Now, of course, we are moving on to the quarterfinal. Of course, it's a best of three series. Cornell, as the fourth seed, will face Colgate University, who lived up to their fifth seed hype after they beat the 12th seed Yale. In fact, they smashed the Bulldogs in their last outing 5-1.
Kind of sad. I was hoping it would go to a game three just because I like to see upsets to a certain extent.
Who doesn't like an underdog story? Yeah, especially because Yale are the Bulldogs, the underdog Bulldogs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It just has a ring to it. But with that, you know, we always have to take into mind form, how the team is doing just based on form. Colgate are fresh off a 5-1 victory. Their morale is probably through the roof, especially because you said they swept Yale. Now, on the other hand, we're looking at Cornell, who ended the season on a high note, which is very true, especially in their last home game against Clarkson, which saw a 6-2 victory. And again, this is, we're just noticing the pattern of home ice advantage. And with that being said,
last road trip was amazing.
Yeah, that as well. But Cornell are coming off a hiatus, and although they may be well rested, sometimes that small hiatus, it could produce the littlest amount of rust that can cause basically do or die moments, situations, you name it. And Alex, like you said off air earlier to me, Cornell need to improve basically offensively bombarding the opposition and being a 60-minute team, or as you like to say, crashing the net. You know, they have to be a 60-minute team. You said that. I needed to use that quote because there's really no other way that could have been otherwise phrased, because that's perfectly situated. Cornell have shown an unhealthy pattern in the middle of the regular season, more or less, of being a third period team rather than being an energetically offensive team from the start. You also brought up another important consideration that there are no shootouts. If this does require overtime, there are no shootouts.
Overtime, baby. We're going all the way to the end. And I mean that, like, cause somebody had asked me, they're like, oh, you know, what do you do when we play overtime? Like, how late is the game going to go? And I said to the person, I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, what do you mean you don't know? Like, give me a time. Is it going to be over by like 10:30? I'm like, dude, if it's tied, we go until somebody scores a goal. So quite literally, we could be there until 2:30 in the morning if nobody scores a goal, which is like absolutely crazy to think about. But at the same time, like, yes, that could conceivably happen. I mean,
Kind of sounds like baseball games. Whenever they need extra innings, you don't know how many they would need. And sometimes it takes forever. A game that starts at 9 or 7 p.m., I've seen it a couple times, could end at like 1 a.m.
Yeah. I mean,
that's basically what we're seeing here in a very, not rare per se, but a very, how about not preferable situation where we need to go into overtime? I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, certainly. I got to say the benefit will be on 5-on-5, as far as I'm aware. Now, if I'm wrong about this, I will amend it. However, I as far as I'm aware, we do 5-on-5 overtime for the playoffs. And so that will be definitely our strong point. And one of the good things to mention, but like you said, Sean, the forecheck needs to have energy from the get-go.
And I guess that also puts us somewhat at an advantage given our shootout record. It's not the best, but hey, at least we have a decent shot at overtime. And like you said, at the moment, it seems to be a 5-on-5 overtime sort of regulation. So, you know, we'll just have to see about that. We actually have a decent record of scoring when it's full 5v5. So again, we could use that to our advantage. And with that being said, we need the line of faithful, of course, to be as rowdy as possible. Home ice advantage is so crucial, especially when we're up against a near even matched team. Now, remember, the last match, like we said earlier, was chippy. It was physical. It didn't necessarily go our way, but there's a little bit of vengeance in mind. Take that vengeance, vent it out, take advantage of that. You really just have to intimidate the toothpasters. Just have to.
Buy your toothpaste. I'm serious. To the line of faithful all, buy some toothpaste.
Yeah, don't buy Crest.
Don't throw it during the game, but like before the game, like toothpaste. It's important. All three games, I want to see that toothpaste. Well, okay. Hopefully only two games. But like, yeah, no, toothpaste. A lot of toothpaste.
And I guess with that, we have to thank you for tuning into this episode of the Big Red Hockey Cast for and from the line of faithful. This has been a Big Red Sports Network production. BRSN is a student-run organization dedicated to promoting the voices of Cornell student-athletes. Make sure to check out at CornellBRSN on Instagram and www.cornellbrsn.com. And shout out to our producers, as always, Michael Farku, Mike Seitz, and Jay Klein. And we'd also like to thank our members of the Big Red Hockey Cast side. We have Ben Rudoy, John Ashbrook, Gabby Nevin, and Sofia Prieto, of course, our latest members once more to the Big Red Hockey Cast team. And with that being said, thank you again for listening. Ciao, ciao for now.